Hey everyone, welcome to the OFP Podcast. I am your host, Joshua Voles, site manager, emperor, supreme warlord, and defender of the faith. And all those titles will be especially important tonight. But I have all that over at onefootdown.com on the SB Nation Network. With me tonight, there is no Jew. There is no Brad. There is no, random person that I messaged, except for there kind of is. But tonight, we got Pat Sullivan, one of the editors here at One Foot Down, joining us. And hey, Bobby Norrell's back, y'all. He's back on the site and looking to do some work. So, fellas, how you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, if anyone has seen my tweets, you guys know I'm dealing with a very strong-willed and weird child. So yeah. We can get weirder as this podcast goes on. So we're well into fall camp. Things are getting going. And you're starting to see the Notre Dame podcast pop up, and everyone's talking about the schedule. And if you've been a listener of the OFT podcast over the last few months, you know we have gone over the schedule a number of times. So I don't think I need another night of me losing my mind and trashing Michigan. Although, I mean, there's never a bad time for that. I mean,
we can always do that. Come on.
Yeah, we can still do that if you want.
You know what? I believe maybe we should just save all Michigan trash talk for like the last part of the show. That's how we'll close it. We'll just trash the hell out of them. It'll be in the good spirit of what we're going to do tonight. So, I mean, anytime's a good time, right? I mean, it's like a tic-tac, right?
Yeah, it works for me.
So, but, there's been a ton of news concerning Notre Dame football. Just some of it's big, some of it's small. And then, and some of it is kind of has nothing to do with what's really happening on the field. But that is also one of my fetishes. So let's get into mesh fetish. And let's talk about these Notre Dame uniforms. Pat, let me start off with you. What the hell?
You mean the picture that is just the same exact uniform they always wear, or
pretty much? I mean, pants people got to be happy though, right?
Yeah, good pants.
Are you a pants person? I personally like the mustard, whatever the hell Pantone you want to call the pants we have now. I actually like that look, but there is a very loud majority that wants the shiny gold. Are you a shiny gold guy?
I think I probably am a little more shiny gold guy than mustard. I don't mind the mustard, to be honest, but I do like these pants. I think these are my preferred pants. So, A+ on the pants, Under Armour, but the jersey looks exactly the same. I don't know what exactly they were going for, unless that was what they were going for. It was the same, but with a little mesh look, maybe. I don't know.
Now, I mentioned this a few times, but Adidas in Nebraska did the same thing a couple years ago. And I remember thinking when they did that, I'm like, oh, that's kind of dope, you know, because, I mean, it was the honor of the 97 Nebraska team. And I just thought, you know, okay, that's a nice little touch. I mean, Adidas didn't fuck something up, so that was nice. It's a nice little touch. But I guess what I found comical of the whole thing about Notre Dame doing these uniforms, the funnier part was that people kind of actually believed that they were actually going to use mesh instead of the 25, 30 years of technology and science that's gone into the performance fabrics of uniforms. Bobby, did you find that strange that people actually thought that it was going to be, or that it should actually be mesh?
It's kind of strange, but I'm kind of, when I saw the uniform, I thought that they should have just gone the whole way and done the mesh. Cause I think just like the faux mesh kind of looks weird. Like when I first saw the numbers, it kind of looks like the Seattle Seahawks, like their home uniforms, like they have that weird, like pattern in their numbers. So I thought, I thought that it looks kind of weird. But Pat's right. It's the exact same uniform aside the numbers and the pants. I do like the black cleats though. So, that's a nice touch.
The black cleats are probably to me are the nicest touch. What I find strange is if they were going to do this throwback look, why did they not change up the freaking number font? Like the 88 was a much fatter number. It was a wider span. These are much narrower. I mean, Jude had said it a few times. He just said, this is a pretty freaking lazy attempt at all of this, right? Like this just seemed like kind of half cocked, thrown together in the middle of the night with a, you know, with a 12 pack of hams.
I mean, I agree with that. I mean, they could have done so many other, if they really wanted to do a throwback, they could have picked so many other eras that were a little bit different than the current uniform.
Oh, for sure. Now, I'm a little bit older than you fellas.
Yeah.
And so I actually played with a mesh jersey. So, and know what the jerseys are like now. And I still don't get why anyone would think that you would go back to an actual mesh jersey for any game. I don't give a shit if they were playing Hicksville High School. performance gear, please. But yeah, to your point, Bobby, and I had made a very vocal stance about what I thought they would do earlier in the summer, and then stayed, you know, stayed my ground, found my hill, put my planted my flag, you know, about it all. And I couldn't see a reason why they did not do the whole Leahy thing. You did the whole Rockne thing. Look, Frank Leahy gets, I don't want to say gets zero credit, but when it comes to the Notre Dame fans, like he's like the last coach that people like bring up. You'll bring up Rockne, you'll bring up Holtz. I mean, I swear to God, people bring up Devine more than they bring up Leahy. To me, that bothers the shit out of me. But I mean, it's not like I personally knew Frank, you know, or anything like that, but, but I am a, you know, consider myself an amateur historian. It just everything that Frank brought to the program and what Notre Dame is today has so much to do with what Frank did, you know, during his time there. And I just thought this was the perfect time. Boston College, he coached there. I mean, it was so fucking obvious. Of course they didn't do it. You know what I mean? It was like the most obvious thing you could do. So of course you wouldn't. I'm looking for some validation, fellas. If you guys want to say, Josh, you know, I feel you.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it seems like Leahy's never brought up this as much as Parsegian or not Rockne or Holtz or any of those guys. But as for the actual jersey, from what I do know, that Notre Dame doesn't have much say like in the design. It's mostly just Under Armour. So maybe if Notre Dame had more say in it, maybe there would be more of a tribute to Leahy, but yeah, I mean,
that sounds like some misinformation for, you know, making up for last year's bullshit pinstripe uniforms. Like, oh, that really ain't our fault. That's that's Under Armour's category.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I got it from last year. It was like Notre Dame didn't, like, that was more Under Armour's doing than Notre Dame's actually. But I mean, if it's Notre Dame's uniforms, I mean, you think they should have a little bit of say, but that's just what this is the information that I have heard. But
on a personal note, I've been blasted for this idea before, but you know, I don't fucking care. I'm sick and tired of talking about the 1988 team. You know, I'm sorry if that pisses anybody off. Look, they were great. They were one of the greatest teams, you know, in Notre Dame history. I get it. I was 10 years old. I get it. And all praise is due to them, right? But it's just like it's the constant lean on. And, you know, not just 88, but the whole Holtz era. That's the constant lean on that. And I think it blinds people to – I mean, obviously we haven't had a bunch of great things to, you know, to celebrate. But we've had some good – you know, end of season results aside, 2012 was a great season, to be a fan. It was a fun season. Last year was a fun season. 2017, I mean, there's been a lot of good. I'm not, and I just think that the constant pushback from the you know, and I'm 41 for God's sakes, which I can say now. It used to be for the whole time I've been on this podcast, it's been like since we started, hey, I'm 40. Hey, I'm not 40 anymore. So
hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm still alive.
You can't use the whole Mike Gundy sound clip.
I can't, man. I'm older than Mike Gundy back then. So just the constant bringing up of that team, it's just bothersome to me. And it's not even like it was last year when they could have done it and say 30-year anniversary and got away. It's 31 years now. Yeah. So it's like,
yeah,
it all feels out of place.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you, but probably for a different reason. The 88 team just gets brought up the most because that's the last team to do it. And right. So that's what makes me mad is that it's been that long. So, I mean, hopefully a team in the next couple of years can do it. And then the 88 team kind of just goes back into history.
I mean, it's not like the 88 team hasn't had their day in the sun.
Oh, I know.
That's over on a Notre Dame Saturday.
I mean, I know. But the Holtz era in general, like,
right.
That's the last time that Notre Dame was great for a long period of time. So everyone's going to hark back on those days. And because that's, I mean, the last time they were great for extended period. So I think that's why that era gets brought up the most. And hopefully that will change in the next couple of years.
Didn't it just seem off to you? Like 150 years is what we're celebrating, right?
And
so we go back 31 for one of the most storied programs. Pat, I know you got an opinion on this. Like, if you were reaching back 150 years in Notre Dame football history, I mean, isn't there something else that would stand out? I mean, would it just be the 88 team, or would you think that there would be something else you could pull up out of the archives?
I'm completely with you on this. As we were talking, I started Googling pictures of Frank Leahy's teams from like the 50s and whatnot. They got these shitty t-shirt jerseys with long sleeves. They've got helmets with no face mask. I want us to go completely back to those. I want our team to rock out there, no face mask, just like, let's do this. Let's kick ass.
Well, you know, and part of the Notre Dame problem is that, and I'm going to have to state this correctly here. Notre Dame is a traditional school, right? Like traditional look. And that's my point is everything that they do, people think is tradition because it has a traditional look and feel to it. But what most people are basing their shit off of, and which is absurd, is just what happened in the Holtz era or what it looked like in the Holtz era. Like when they say blue, you know, like navy blue is our traditional uniforms. Well, yes and no, kind of not really. Go back to Frank Leahy, who won a lot of national championships, and every season but one, they were in green. You know, Clashmore Mike, Frank Leahy. I mean, Pat, you are the definitive author, I believe, now on Clashmore Mike. I mean, wouldn't you have liked to have seen a senior day with some Frank Leahy era throwback look uniforms and someone trotting out Clashmore Mike? I mean, wouldn't that bring a tear to your fucking eye in that stadium?
Oh yeah, I'd be hooting and hollering. I'd probably try to get on the field to see Clashmore Mike.
Oh, I'd lose my press credentials, dude. Because I would. There's no way in hell I'd stay off the field before that 5 minutes. I mean, yeah. Nope, I'm down there.
I gotta try to pet Clashmore Mike. Like that's number one on my list. I gotta get there. So yeah, I'm all in.
You got a bunch of dog groupies gonna have to get Faux Clashmore Mike his own Instagram account or something like that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, we're talking an awful lot about something that something that really doesn't matter, but at the same time it just speaks to what kind of a clusterfuck it's felt like, you know, just going back to what happened yesterday or last year with the pinstripe uniforms. It's just a weird thing, you know, calling a green out versus Michigan and then being cowards and not wearing the green, you know, and then, but then wearing them on scene. I mean, seriously, dude, if you're going to do a green out, go full. I mean, just do it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, why hold back? Why there's nothing that's going to make you the green jersey is not going to cause Notre Dame to lose against Michigan. Especially that night, they kicked the shit out of Michigan. But we'll get to that later. So, I mean, it just, I know Notre Dame's just easing on into this stuff. I mean, that's the, last year was the first time they actually called for a green out, you know, where it was like university backed. I mean, I think they did like white terrible towels for USC in 2011. We got our asses kicked. But, which was awful.
That was a fun game.
Yeah, that was a great, that was
fumble at the 1 yard line.
Yeah. That was the last time Wes and I came live together. In fact, we were going to go sit separately from each other, figuring we were bad juice. But I remember them handing out the towels. There might have been a game, I think maybe even in 07, where they handed out pom-poms.
They had green towels during Weiss one year.
They had green pom-poms for Notre Dame's game against Michigan State. I think that was 2007. I want to say. So if that tells you anything about what's going on, they're just kind of easing on into this stuff. Maybe by 2024, maybe we're a little more adjusted to the norm. I don't know. It is, as everyone will say, you know, when they're finished talking about it, it is what it is, but it shouldn't be. So. So, all right. So let's dive into what are you guys looking for this season? I have had you guys on the show. Pat's at a wedding every other night in the summertime. I don't even know how they do weddings on Wednesday nights, but they do them. Bobby's like trapped down in Georgia, you know, instead of the SOS call to get back to OFD. So you know, well, let's bring up a little bit of the stuff about the season. So, Pat, let me ask you. What are you looking forward to in this season as far as, like, you know, is there a certain expectation? Is there a certain game that you're looking forward to, a certain result possibly looming? Do you have a weird and wild prediction?
Weird and wild prediction, I'll have to get back to you. I mean, Georgia's the game I'm most excited about for sure.
Why? Because of the giantness of it all.
It's huge. It's in Athens. You know, they're number three in the country or whatever in the coaches poll. Like, that's just like, that is the game this season that I'm so that's what, when we'll find out how good Notre Dame really is. Like,
how much do you think the Twitter shit from the playoffs that Georgia was throwing out is going to do? Is going to be mentioned that week.
It'll be mentioned.
That was a pretty big, I wouldn't say pretty big story, but I mean, it was widely discussed and talked about when Georgia was just trashing Notre Dame leading up to the playoff. And then, you know, during that game.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I think, because Clemson was able to destroy Alabama too. And then, like, this year we heard one Clemson player say Notre Dame was the best team they played. Like, it was whatever.
That guy changed the cliff notes that Notre Dame wasn't a full member in the ACC. I'll give that guy was I can't remember his name, but he was a lineman for Clemson. But listen, whoever is looking to hire somebody, that's your guy. That's your company guy right there. He's gonna toe the line for you. Go up there and say what needs to be said.
But yeah, and then, like, I mean, Georgia got pretty embarrassed themselves, losing to Texas in their bowl game, and you know they're
and physically manhandled in that game too. I mean, yeah, like, by Texas.
Yeah, by Texas. Like, I'm sorry, Texas is good, but they're not that. They're not good.
A physical football team. I mean, I just they've never come across as a bunch of tough guys. I mean, Texas always comes off as more, hell, I don't know. And I won't say soft, but, you know, they've always come off as more entitled than even Notre Dame over the last couple decades or last decade or so.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. So to me, that was like, that kind of shut up some of their trash talking, I guess. But at the same time, Georgia is just, you know, it's a huge game. They're a huge team. Like, their offensive line is massive, and our defensive tackles, who knows if they're going to show up. But I think that'll just show us a lot about how good Notre Dame is going to be this year. I mean, how well is Book going to be able to move the ball against Georgia? Because we saw Wimbush against Georgia and the ball didn't get moved. So hopefully we'll see a little bit better offense. But that's what I'm most excited for in terms of like games. And then I'm pumped to watch like Julian Aquara. I think he's just going to have an unbelievable season. I'm so pumped to watch him play.
Bobby, you got anything to add on that end?
On Aquara or anything? I'm most excited for the Georgia game, mostly because I'll be there. But it should be a wild weekend in Athens. And it'll be even better if Notre Dame finds a way to win. And just about that game, right now, I think I saw the spread at 9.5 or something like that. And
so it's dropped because I thought it was like at 11.5.
Yeah, it started out at like 11 or 10, and then I saw 9.5. So like that's a huge spread for a top 10 matchup, I think. And I feel like for one time, Notre Dame finally will get to play that like underdog role, because most of the time, I mean, they're not the underdog, and they'll be able to use that underdog role. And then on top of that, I mean, everything that Georgia was throwing out there during the playoffs last year, basically saying Notre Dame wasn't worthy. Notre Dame will definitely have a bunch of bulletin board material for that game. And I think if I was a betting man, I'd probably pick Notre Dame to cover that 9.5. I just think, Georgia's not Alabama and Georgia's not Clemson. So, I mean, I don't see Notre Dame getting their asses handed to them. I mean, but who knows? I mean, they got their asses handed to Miami 2 years ago. So,
No, I mean, it, on the road, it definitely can happen. I mean, it can happen in a flash, but I've been as guilty as anybody of picking as many holes as I can in Georgia. And I've found, you know, found a number of them. And then I had Mike Felder on from Watch Stadium, covers a lot of national college football stuff, been around a long time. And he was not as high on Georgia as everybody else either, for a lot of the same reasons that I was bringing up. Like, look, this Georgia defense is not the 2017 Georgia defense. So I mean,
so
that's a bonus, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, they're also Fromm's losing some like his top five, three or four receivers. He's five. You're losing your tight end. I mean, you do have that Andrew Thomas, who's a great offensive lineman, would probably be a first round pick.
Oh, DeAndre Swift's on there. I mean,
Holmes
is not saying that this team is not a top five team.
Georgia's gotten to the point where they just reload. I mean, so they definitely have the skilled players on offense, but I just think that Notre Dame, everybody is talking Georgia up, and I feel like that will play in Notre Dame's favor in that game. So I'm definitely looking forward to that game and other things. I'm looking forward to seeing Ian Book, because I just thought he was fantastic last year, and traditionally under Kelly, or at least with Kaiser going into year two, he wasn't as good as year one. So hopefully that's not the case with Book. And I don't think it will be, because I think he's just a different type of guy. So definitely that. And then I'm pretty high on Jafar Armstrong too. I think he might have a huge year. I really liked what I saw from him last year.
Okay. Let me ask you guys this. We most excited. And I think I'm with you. I think on Georgia. But in a way, this is a side quest, right? So I'm going to do a side quest off the side quest. And I'm really excited about beating the shit out of USC for the third year in a row. I mean, I don't know if fans have really, maybe they've just gotten over the Pete Carroll era, because USC has been just so, you know, weird since then. But I'm still not over the Pete Carroll era. And I want to stomp him. I want Notre Dame to – I wanted him to do it last year in L.A., but I believe mileage finally wore, you know, more than not enough. I mean, they look sluggish as shit out there. But, you know, I just – I want a repeat of 2017 inside our house. I think they can absolutely do it. USC's got a pretty brutal schedule leading up to that as it is. And I'm going to bury him. I mean, the picture of, you know, the students walking around with the casket of Barry SC, I want that to be my lead image after we beat the shit out of him. Does that move the needle for you at all, Pat?
Oh, I mean, it definitely does. The Pete Carroll era, I don't like to think about it or talk about it because it was so horrible, but
because it was so brutal, right? I mean, it was just like one beat down after another after and your best moment of the Pete. I mean, Bob Davie did beat Pete Carroll. Okay, so that I guess we got him there. But you know, basically your best moment of the part of that era is still a loss. I mean, so
yeah. Yeah, I would say I'm excited also for that. For me, it's a little less so just because 2017 was so perfect in how much we destroyed them, decimated them, ruined their lives that night. That to me, like at this point, let's just do it again. I'm like, it's almost business as usual until Clay Helton's not their coach. Like, we're just going to keep kicking their ass. So like, I'm excited for that, but for me, I'm a little over it just because I'm trying not to think about the Pete Carroll era, and 2017 was so satisfying.
Bobby, do you feel like we're just all like dismissing, not dismissing, but like, is everyone taking USC game for granted this year? Like, that's usually a game everyone has circled and you're going to talk about it. And regardless of what's going on with them, like, no one is talking about USC at all, as far as Notre Dame fans are concerned. It's strange to me when we have this weird rivalry complex, you know, that, you know, you got to be careful about what team you call a rival and all that. So the one that everyone agrees upon that is an actual rival is a team that you are just not talking about. No one is. I mean, it's not in the top three games so I don't think anyone considers this in the fourth. I mean, if you're looking at the schedule, everyone's talking about Georgia, Michigan, Stanford. And then after that, everyone's talking about Virginia and Virginia Tech. So, I mean, is SC really the sixth, in a lot of ways, the sixth biggest game on the schedule?
I mean, right now, probably, yeah, but maybe on October 12th, that's different. Cause I mean, who knows what you're getting out of USC this year. I mean, then coming off of 5-7 year, didn't make a bowl game.
We're going to have a green out for a team that's the sixth toughest.
Yeah, but that could all change. Right, I mean, right. If they're 5-1 going into that game and ranked, I mean, it's a whole different feeling, but yeah, I think some people are taking that game for granted. I mean, when you have a schedule that has a road game to Georgia, at Michigan, and at Stanford, those are people, and those teams had good years last year. I mean, people are going to mark those first before a 5-7 USC team. So, but I mean, it still is USC, and they still have USC talent, and it's still a rivalry game. So,
see, I think that's the difference. That was the difference with Pete Carroll, though. Even when Notre Dame was shit, Pete Carroll had Notre Dame circled every single year. Yeah. Nobody got up for their. I mean, before Urban Meyer became the rival killer that he was, it was Pete Carroll. Where, like, look, he understood as well as anybody that to keep your program strong, you beat down your rival. You never take them for granted. Now, this isn't to say that Notre Dame, the football program, and Brian Kelly aren't taking SC as seriously as the fans. But in that same sense, the USC fandom, however fair weather they were, they're around that time, they're following the orders of General Carroll there. They were all hyped up for Notre Dame regardless. I just feel that we're lacking in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there's still a pretty big part of Notre Dame fans that hate USC and will have this as their number one game of the year. So I still think it's still a big game and people are going to take it seriously. It's just, I think it's more of USC sucking last year, and you have those three big names on your schedule that are the road to the playoff, essentially. So I don't think it's not that people don't care about USC. I just think it's those other factors that I just mentioned.
Okay, so let's get real serious here. Rivalry trophies. Pat, I mean, we're talking about SC, and one of the things I love about college football, love about rivalries itself, are the absolutely stupid and weird named and useless and benign. I mean, I like all that shit. I love a good rivalry trophy, however terrible it is. Even the civil conflict trophy between UCF and Connecticut was great in a way because I don't know, because it was so terrible, right? Like was it Nebraska, Iowa, when they had the the corn giver trophy, or maybe when they changed the Cy-Hawk trophy, maybe that was the one, but one of them had like a child handing corn to a farmer. I mean, it's fucking out there, right? But you know, Notre Dame's got a lot of rivalry trophies. Pat, do you got any strong or lukewarm feelings about any of Notre Dame's rivalry trophies and anything about that at all?
I mean, I've never been super into them, but at the same time, I really appreciate the ridiculousness of it all, like you were talking about. So first of all, the civil conflict, just to go off topic here, is unbelievable. And Bob Diaco is a god. I love him to death. So Big Game Bob forever. I love you. Thank you for bringing us that ridiculous rivalry. But I mean, for me, the jeweled shillelagh is awesome just because of what it represents with Notre Dame and USC, and you know how that rivalry was pretty instrumental in making Notre Dame a national team. So that one's really cool. And then just like the megaphone after seeing Notre Dame win it in 17 and Brian Kelly dance and then raise this trophy over his head and then just go,
oh, well, berserker mode, like straight berserker.
But then he just said, "That's a megaphone." That's all he said. It was the stupidest thing, but it was so funny. I love that one. So I'm a big megaphone guy for sure. But I mean, the other ones, they're fine, but most of them, it's whatever. It's like, oh, great, we have all the trophies. That's good because that means we're beating all of our rivals. But those are the two, I think, for Notre Dame that I really enjoy just based on what I've seen.
Bobby?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have many feelings on at least Notre Dame's rivalry trophies. I mean, the megaphone's cool, especially after 17 and what Kelly did. But the one rivalry trophy I like, I think it's Iowa and Minnesota, Floyd or Rosedale. That's just a pig.
Oh, bring that big pig, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that I enjoy the most, probably. Notre Dame's trophies, I feel like those games are more about the teams themselves than the actual trophy, in my opinion. So they just, the trophies don't mean that much to me. I just care more about kicking the other team's ass. So,
well, I'm glad you brought up Minnesota, because not only do they have the pig, but they got one of the other better rivalry trophies in college football. And that's that big fucking axe.
Oh yeah. With Wisconsin.
And one of the images of college football that has just burned into my brain is one of the games they played. Wisconsin kicker kicks the game winning field goal and goes running over to all. I mean, it was the defensive line that was standing over there next to that table, that axe. And that kicker ran over there like he didn't give a what and grabbed that axe to go back. I mean, so seeing all that and seeing how cool that, do you think that you guys think that it would, there'd be a lot different feel with Notre Dame and their trophies if they actually brought them onto the field? I mean, that's the one thing. I mean,
yes.
I think they got some great trophies. They got some great stories behind them. I mean, why not bring them? I mean, what? And I asked this question to Brian Harden when he was the SID at Notre Dame, however many years ago it was. And he was just like, there's too many of them. I'm like, okay, I agree. But why can't you bring out the jeweled shillelagh? And basically Notre Dame's stance was, since there's so many of them, they weren't going to like diss another school by highlighting one or the other, which is bullshit. Why would you not highlight, you know, like the megaphone or the jeweled shillelagh? Michigan State and USC, I mean, who gives a fuck what Boston College thinks if you don't bring the Frank Leahy, you know, glass bowl out to the field.
Yeah.
I have a couple comments on this really quick.
Please.
First and foremost, I don't really understand that there's too many of them thing. They're not bringing them all out at once, right? Like, where they're talking about one per week.
Right.
Like, why does that matter how many there are? You bring one down to the field and it's there. Secondly, I really want to see Elohi Gilman sprinting around the field swinging the jeweled shillelagh. That sounds amazing.
Hell yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. Because one of the cooler things that we did on the site last year was Jude finding, literally, this trophy was lost to history. The Shillelagh trophy, another Shillelagh between Notre Dame and Northwestern. If you Googled any of it leading up to before Jude found it, or kind of found it, I mean, all trails led to a dead end. So, you know, he found it within like 12 hours of publishing that story of, you know, finding out what kind of happened to it. The owner stepped forward and we put it out there, you know, and I was up in the press box, you know, putting this out to other reporters, to Michael Burt, anyone that will listen. Like, we found this thing that everyone said was lost. You know, they found it in a dumpster. It was at an auction. This guy has it. He's willing to sell it back to the schools. And I can't remember what the price was, but basically what he paid for it is what he was asking for from the schools, because he wanted to put it back. You know, he wanted to give the history back, right? But he wasn't gonna get shorted, I think, like maybe 13 grand or whatever. But I mean, what Northwestern basically stated, they didn't have like the budget to purchase this thing. and by all rights, it was Northwestern's to own. You know, they had beat Notre Dame the last time they had played. So, I know Notre Dame wouldn't have bought it because everyone's just kind of like pretending that things don't exist, right, when it disappears. I just think there was a huge missed opportunity at some fun, you know, with this thing. And maybe Notre Dame's kicking themselves now. Maybe they should have bought the damn thing. They beat them, and then they had this other – but that's a big shillelagh. I mean, can you imagine Elohi Gilman carrying around that? That is a long shillelagh. That's almost like a walking stick. That'll do some damage. I mean, I know the jeweled shillelagh would probably, you know, that's going to leave some cuts. You're going to need a cut man in the corner. But I mean, it just seems like such madness that they would just dismiss all of this. And yet you have this lame-ass, it's not even a rival, whatever trophy they have with Navy, where they each have a piece. And when they play that week, they bring the trophies together. I mean, if you're going to like celebrate something like that, why the hell do you not just bring the damn megaphone onto the field?
Yeah. I have one comment about this. Like, it seems like all the trophy games, it's mostly like the ones you think about are all like Big Ten schools, and like, you don't really think of like the SEC or the
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm pretty into them. So like the Wagon Wheel between Kansas, Missouri. I mean, there's quite a few. I mean, you got the the Victory Bells out there in LA. You got the Axe between Cal and Stanford. I mean, there's a lot of good ones outside of the Midwest. But I mean, I'll let you finish here. Your sentiment is correct, where there is a large concentration of those within the Midwest Big Ten era.
Yeah. So I think it's never been like that for Notre Dame to just like have the trophies on the field. I mean, maybe it is a missed opportunity, but yeah, I mean, that was just my thought about that. It seems like it's mostly just Big Ten schools that have that, where they're going running to get the bucket, or they're going to get the old brass platoon or some shit like that. So yeah, that was my thought about that.
Oh, don't make fun of the old brass platoon, buddy. That was the first college football game I ever went to in my life. Down in Bloomington.
I'm sure Michigan State won.
Oh, and they did. They pounded IU. I want to say that was in 91, maybe.
Indiana was good back. Indiana was decent.
Bill Mallory was a good program. Or had a good program going. But I think they might have topped out around in that 87 to 90, 91 era. you know, like yeah. Anthony Thompson down there and, you know, and all that. Look at me rattling off Hoosier football history here. but anyway, but no, that I have a special place in my heart for that trophy. I had seen that trophy live and in person and asked my, my step grandfather, who's an IU alum, you know, what is that? And then he explained it to me. And it, that was really what started it all with me with rivalry trophies was the old brass platoon. So, you know, all praises be to you, brass platoon. Maybe I shouldn't have been because I still chew tobacco. Maybe I shouldn't. Is there, you know, while we're on the topic of college football, because college football of like the wacky shit around it, is there anything to you guys that stick out that that outside of Notre Dame itself, just in this in college football here in 2019, just some wacky shit that's – what are you guys ready for this year? I mean, something's – and that's the thing. We can have a prediction about something, but you never see it coming, right? That's what makes college football so great is just some of the wild stuff, like Appalachian State upset in Michigan, you know, just kind of awesome stuff like that. You know, Michigan just, you know, never win in the Big Ten. anything that has to do with Michigan being losers, you know, was awesome. But is there anything that this year you kind of have a sneaky suspicion about that you know, I don't know, maybe you're looking seeing that you're gonna keep an extra eye on, like maybe a Pac-10 throwdown or Pac-12.
I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to see, like if Michigan can't get it done this year, like is there ever going to be any heat on Harbaugh? Like, or is he just going to get a free pass because he's a Michigan man?
Well, apparently they were co Big Ten champions last year. So
yeah, I was listening to
he's been doing a good job.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast where they're interviewing him, and he said they were co Big Ten champions. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? But yeah, so I'm interested in that. Like, can he beat Michigan, Notre Dame, or Michigan State, Notre Dame, or Ohio State? He's only beaten one of those teams. He's beaten Michigan State twice, and both times he beat them, Michigan State was 3-9 one year, and then last year Michigan State was 6-6. So. I'm interested to see if there's any heat on him at all, if he just can't get it done.
I mean, is there anybody that, I mean, are we looking at just a straight lock too with Clemson and Alabama, for the playoffs? I mean, I think I know everybody's answers. If I would ask the question, are we ready for like a big wrench getting thrown into the mix there, you know, where maybe only one of them get in or somehow neither of them get in, you know, not, I don't think that I like to see the odds on that. Cause it's gotta be terrible.
Are you talking about just making the playoffs or the championship in general or the final
playoffs, you know, whatever, you know, just some I'm ready for ready for some different storylines.
Yeah. I mean, I think Clemson's probably a pretty good lock to make the playoffs. I don't see anyone in the ACC challenging them. Alabama's a little bit different because, I mean, there's a little more competition in the SEC and a little more or a little less margin for error. So, and I think Trevor Lawrence is just going to be an animal. So I think Clemson's a pretty good bet to make the playoffs and maybe make the final again. So
we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and I'm going to stay on the Clemson tip. But we're going to take a quick break real sec and pay some bills. All right, we are back, and we are talking about Clemson on a Notre Dame football podcast. Pat Sullivan, let me ask you, because I am just curious. Like, look, and you all should be curious, too. Pat has written two of the most thought-provoking articles of the summer season with the investigative reports into the Leprechaun versus Clashmore Mike, and then today's opus about Tyler Cruz's Dynamite being played for the last decade by the Notre Dame band. If you haven't read those pieces, get your asses to the site and read that. It's they're unbelievable. But Dabo Swinney, how much of a free pass is Dabo getting from the media? I had seen some stuff come up on social media the last couple of days about just some random stuff about Dabo. And there was always some stuff, you know, like him talking about if they ever paid players, he's quitting college football and just kind of stuff like that. And then I don't really care about the Kelly Bryant situation, but it just seems like there's a lot not to like about Dabo, even though the media is selling every likable thing they can pick off of him.
I mean, I'm in the camp that, I mean, I probably shouldn't, but I kind of like Dabo Sweeney. Like, no, he's he's a guy that I would play for in a heartbeat. I mean, he just seems like just a regular guy. So, but I personally, I don't think, in my view, there's nothing that you can hate about the guy. I mean, it seems like he runs a pretty clean program outside of a few weird drug tests last December. But I like Dabo Sweeney. I think he's a pretty, he's better than, I like him more than I like Nick Saban.
You got there?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm like aggressively pro Dabo. So I'm mostly on the side of Bobby, but I think the media at this point has built up this squeaky clean Christian boy image of Dabo, and therefore they're trying not to.
Is the fall about to happen?
Ooh, I mean, look, I don't know if it's going to be that bad, but
I mean, like Dabo Sweeney, like offensive coordinator at Liberty.
That would be an unbelievable coaching staff. I don't, as long as he's still winning and still, for the most part, saying the right things. Like, I mean, obviously I don't agree with him on certain things about paying players probably, but like, I mean, I think he's going to be fine and they're going to keep writing about him and portraying him as this, you know, good boy coach. And honestly, I've mostly bought into it. I think he's so fun. He's hilarious. There's only one other coach in the country that I probably love more than him, and that's Dino Babers at Syracuse. He's my favorite. I love that guy.
I know you love Dino, and I got into some very heated arguments with Syracuse fans last year. And John Casillo, the site manager at Troy News, is an absolute magician. I called Dino a coward for kicking that field goal. And, you know, I said it with a whole lot of jest and fun because we just got done beating the crap out of them. But at the same time, I mean, I meant it in a lot of ways too, because, I mean, really, I mean, what are you doing, you know? What are you doing with that field goal? So that is the only flaw that I have found that would be like the one notch on a dislike column with Dino. So I'm with you a lot on that route.
Yeah. I mean, I was honestly very mad at Dabo. Dino at the time for that. I was pretty mad at him at the time, but actually in retrospect now, I think it's hilarious. I actually love it. It's so petty to decide to kick that field goal at that point in that game. So that I'm actually on board.
And I got roasted by every Syracuse fan alive. Like, they did like background checks on me and dug up like my eighth grade, you know, science fucking grades to come at me about being petty by being petty themselves. But that's what it felt like, the pettiest thing that you could do in a football game where you just got completely worked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see you flip the script on that, and that's Notre Dame. That's a whole different story. That's an entirely different story.
For sure. For sure.
And Notre Dame fans would not stick up for anybody calling Brian Kelly a coward for kicking out the goal either, is the other thing. That's just not going to happen. Oh, speaking of which, hey, we got the BK Homeboy shirts out today. go support me and get a sweet t-shirt. So look, we're gonna slowly work our way here to a finish line. But I kind of teased that we were going to talk about Michigan at the end here. So that was the quest, is for us to talk shit about Michigan, was the absolute quest. And everything else was a side quest. And if you're wondering why I keep mentioning these things, because I don't know, I have a problem. I will keep beating the same ridiculous title / point to death in my head. So you guys got to deal with it too. But so it's open mic night here at the Firefly Inn. let's talk about Michigan. So I'm going to start with you, Bobby. Once you, I mean, I don't care how long you take. Lay out Michigan. Say whatever you want. Feel however you want to feel. If you need to, like, rip your shirt.
If you need
a Four Locos seltzer, by all means, find one. Can you guys, what the hell happened this summer? We went from, you know, ain't no laws with the claws and that seltzer to Natural Light making their own seltzer. And now Four Locos is making a seltzer. I mean, all the just, this has got a very 2007 college football feel to it to me. Like, very weird things leading up to the season.
Just don't say that, because 2007 is not good for us.
That's, I know, but it was good for somebody, right? It doesn't have to be bad for us again. It can be bad for somebody else.
Like Michigan. So you just want me to go in on Michigan, my thoughts, or?
Yeah, or what? So, seriously, like,
I don't understand the hype around Michigan this season. After you lose Rayshon Gary, you're losing Bush, you're losing Winovich, you're losing all your playmakers on defense, and then your offense has always been pedestrian with Jim Harbaugh. They're never going to put up 40 points, 50 points a game, and I just don't understand the hype. Why are they ranked in the top 10? I mean, it just seems like, I mean, they get blown out of Ohio State. They get blown out against Florida. Notre Dame manhandled them for most of the game last year. And it just seems like they always get a free pass because Jim Harbaugh is God. Like, you know, it just irks me to how much hype they're getting right now. And, you know, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I don't think they will.
My son was talking about Satan tonight. So, I mean, we can go at it, Jim. Throw down, buddy. I'm in the 419 right now.
Yeah. I don't understand. I just, like,
it's confusing, right, Bobby? Like,
yeah,
you can't wrap your beautiful hair around the hype
Shea Patterson's getting. Like, I don't get why is Shea Patterson getting all the hype? Like,
he was a 5-star that wore a 20 while he played at Ole Miss. I don't know. I mean, yeah. You can pick up any reason for someone just to throw Michigan a bone for. I mean, they've been doing it for what now? 2 decades?
Yeah, I mean, for all the crap Notre Dame gets about being irrelevant and never winning big games and shit like that, it seems like Michigan, they never get shit on for that. I mean, when's the last time Michigan won a big game? When's the last time they were competing for playoffs and championships? I mean, it irks me.
Pat, you ready to tee off on them, buddy?
I don't have that much to say except for this. Michigan is going to lose Saturday, September 7th at 11 a.m. against Army at home. I'm calling it now.
Yeah.
Army is going to beat them.
I saw today Army's preseason ranked.
This is their year.
Doc is leading them across the goal line.
Hey, Army, I have honestly no idea who they lost from last year, but they went 11-2.
Just for starters.
They went 11-2. They took Oklahoma to overtime. They kicked the shit out of Houston in their bowl game.
Awesome game to watch. I mean, that was.
Yeah.
I mean, the triple option when it's ran like that, like when Georgia Tech and Paul Johnson did to Van Gorder in Louisville, that's just like, that's must see TV. That's a beat down. It reminds you of like when Miami used to run up the score, you weren't turning the game. You weren't turning the TV to a different channel because you just want to constantly watch that beat down. Like it was not boring if they just keep beating them up, you know? So yeah, Army did that against Houston. They're legit, man.
I mean, you tell me that a defense that's replacing like 10 of 11 starters will be able to stop an awesome triple option attack firing on all cylinders. No way. Army wins. Calling it now.
That's the first game of the season too, right? For Michigan.
No, second. They play Middle Tennessee first, which I thought about calling for Middle Tennessee, but decided against it.
I don't know, man. That that's a, the Blue Raiders.
The Blue Raiders.
It's a tough one. Now, you know, if Army was actually their first game of the season, I could see all of our predictions of an Army victory totally failing because, you know, you got a lot of extra time leading up to that game. But, man, you stick a Middle Tennessee in before that. I mean, we're laughing about that. But think of how good you really need to look in that first week and how good you're not going to be anyways. You know, there isn't a whole lot of time. I'm sure, you know, because Notre Dame does it, you're going to sneak some option defense, you know, in during fall camp and all stuff. But it's going to be tough for him. It's just flat out going to be tough for him.
Yeah, I mean, they have their next game after this. It's Wisconsin at Wisconsin. I don't want to say they're going to be looking ahead to September 21st.
Maybe they're looking ahead to September 28th. Rutgers, which is the only team Jim Harbaugh, I feel like they actually can handle, or have handled during the Jim Harbaugh era, has been Rutgers. But it's gotten worse every year, right? Like, they beat Rutgers, Jim Harbaugh's first year, like 64-0. And then it was 56-0. And then it was, Rutgers is catching up. They're just about there, you know. You give them another decade.
Just another 10 years and they'll be there. They are
so close.
Is Rutgers back? Is Rutgers back?
Is Rutgers back? Rutgers back!
It is the 150th anniversary of college football, and they played in one of the first games, so.
There we go. Back. It's their year.
There is one thing I want to come back to. What you were asking us about what we're looking forward to this year, and I just thought about this. I'm looking forward to Brian Van Gorder coming back and Bob Davie coming back to Notre Dame Stadium this year.
Hell yeah.
Because both those games, they could be really ugly, and they should be really ugly.
If only somehow Bob Diaco was involved in this, yeah. It would just be like, the Holy Trinity.
Where is Bob Diaco right now? Hold on. I want to do some research.
I thought he was a linebackers coach in Nebraska.
No, I just read it today. He's a defensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech.
He's on his way back up. His way back up.
You know who else is at Louisiana Tech?
Skip Holtz.
Still? Okay. My all-time favorite Notre Dame football player, Jeff Burris.
Oh, he is?
He's defensive backs coach down at La Tech. Yeah, shout out to Jeff Burris, follower of One Foot Down on Twitter, at One Foot Down. Hell yeah. Looks good in the gray hair. But let's get back to a gray hair program, and that's Michigan. You know, I brought up 2007 cringingly and, you know, kind of unwillingly, but I said it and kind of put it out. I mean, Michigan has a chance this year. Not like they have the toughest schedule. I think everyone so much of the rankings are like projecting what they're going to be at the end of the season rather than how good they really are, which is a complete horseshit. You know, just let it play out. You know, lay out your best teams, and then as they win and lose, you know, move them around. To me, that seems simple enough. But instead, everyone tries to project because they act like, you know, if they put someone in fifth place and that's where they're going to finish at the end of the season, they were fucking right, man. I was dead right. And no one's right. Everyone's fucking way wrong with, you know, most of those polls. But I could see a Michigan team this year losing more than – I mean, I can see them losing a handful of games. I mean, we've already brought up Army, five. Right? Army's one. At Wisconsin's two.
At Penn State.
So let me go through the list.
Okay.
I got a fun line of stuff going on here. So let's say you lose your 0-2, and then you take it – after Army, Wisconsin, you take it out on Rutgers. You're 1-2. Iowa comes in. Maybe you squeak that one out. It's 2-2. Life's feeling okay. You go to Illinois. You're 3-2. You go to Penn State. Lose that game. 3-3. Notre Dame comes up. Kicks the fucking dog shit out of you in your fucking backyard. You're 3-4. Are we 3-4 now?
4-4, your Middle Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. I had them scrolled up. Okay, so we're 4-4. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Maryland is a team that can beat Michigan.
Absolutely.
Michigan State rival is a team that can beat Michigan.
Definitely.
Indiana in Bloomington is a team that can and should have fucking done it three or four times over the last decade, beat Michigan.
I can tell you exactly how that game will go.
Ohio State, who has beaten you 9 years in a row at the end of the season, you could literally see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 game losing streak for the Wolverines in 2019 to end the season. Bowl-less.
I mean, I would love to see that.
Michigan, don't let this podcast distract you from the fact that Michigan is going to go 4-8 in 2019.
Let's go.
I'd love to see that. I really would. But I know that Indiana game, Indiana will have the lead going in the fourth quarter and end up losing by three touchdowns. They'll have
a 28-point lead and lose by fucking 8.
Yes, that's exactly how it will happen. So,
because... Look, Indiana got straight robbed a couple of times. That is the most – I'm telling you, I gear up every year for that Michigan-Indiana game. Like I honestly, God, circle that game on my calendar because, number one, I know it's probably going to be a good game one way or the other, right? It's going to be highly entertaining because the Michigan angst, it's like our Pitt, you know, in a lot of ways, except Pitt can fucking beat us.
Yeah.
Something about that game is just, it's mystifying. And the amount of ways Indiana has found to lose that game is just insane. But I just think everyone's projecting Michigan. I'm with you, Bobby, and I've said it 100 times over. You can't lose all that talent on defense. That was your core, right? Except when you got your asses handed to you by Ohio State.
And Florida.
Your genius defensive coordinator can't figure out how to stop a crossing route for four quarters. You know, you lose all that. They say that they have this offensive line that is, you know, just as great, one of the best in college football, except for the fact that I saw Notre Dame's defensive line beat the dog shit out of them last year like it was nothing. You know, they got a starter down. He may be back for the Notre Dame game. I don't know, but he's got a knee injury, but... I'm not buying the hype. And anytime someone says one of the best in the Big Ten, or I put that tweet out today, who gives a shit about all conference or best in your conference? I mean, it means nothing to me when you're talking grand scheme, right? Shea Patterson, who didn't prove jack and shit last year, I have a hard time seeing what supposedly these other people are seeing. And then when I start going down their schedule, and knowing that weird things can happen because it is college football and it's in all its glory, man, it could be a hell of a losing season for Michigan football. A hell of a losing season.
And Harbaugh will still probably keep his job.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
You know, but and he would fight for that so he could win 7 games the next year and then jump to the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, and look, Jim Harbaugh's got a perfect out, right? He's not calling the plays this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that person is so – I don't know. Did you guys read the – or aware of, like, the Luke Fickell?
Yeah, I just read about that today. That was interesting. Yeah.
That shit's insane. And what Fickell said was dead on. And that is just representative of what that program thinks they need to do. You know what I mean?
What did he say?
Surprise him in the least.
What did he say?
Well, there was a transfer from Michigan to Cincinnati, and he was trying to get immediate eligibility, you know, which is a crapshoot all the way around. And usually in those cases, though, you're only going to get it regardless if the opposing coach or if the coach being left behind kind of gives a blessing in a way, you know what I mean? Like approves of the transfer, like has glowing things to say. And apparently Jim did not. And so Luke kind of put it out there that he was not, and I can't remember the kid's name. I apologize for that. But you know, the kid did not get the proper respect from Michigan and Jim Harbaugh to the NCAA. And then Harbaugh went on there saying, I'm just being truthful. This is about the truth. I'm bringing out the truth. I mean, I don't know if he's Tom Cruise or Jack Nicholson. He's probably Tom Cruise. It's crazy as shit with Scientology. But I mean that's what it came off as in that interview. Like, what the hell? And Fickleman basically said that, like, look, this is their program. This is what Michigan does.
So, and the kid had a legitimate reason to transfer. Like, he was from Cincinnati and like he had like depression or like anxiety or something, so he wanted to move home.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And Harbaugh still said no. So I mean,
just because Jim Harbaugh's still living in 1955.
Yeah.
And so depression and any kind of mental illness probably to him is probably some weird thing, you know, some doctor with a piece of paper on the wall is making up.
Yeah.
You know, drink some milk. You know, buy more pants with pleats. So, I don't know. I cannot wait to shit on Michigan legitimately. You know, I'll still sit here and I won't be surprised when they squeak by Army, or, you know, when a bad call gives them a win against Wisconsin, or, you know, the blowout Rutgers, Iowa kind of sneaking one out. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised, you know, if they make it to Notre Dame undefeated. But I won't be surprised either with two or three losses on the record.
I would be more surprised if they do make it to Notre Dame undefeated, because that means they would have gone to Penn State and to Wisconsin and got wins. And I think they'll probably lose at least one of them.
I'm just saying, the way that program is, I don't think anything really would shock me.
Yeah.
You know, they were not going to make, you know, Ohio State's beating them at the end of the year regardless. It's a close deal. And if they don't do it, Michigan State's going to do it. So, you know, one of them is going to ruin their cause one way or the other. So I don't know. I just, anything's up for grabs. I don't see it, that program. Maybe the media just wants them to be so good, so damn bad. But they're the same damn team they've been for the last 40 years. I mean, their one national title was shared with Nebraska, who would have wiped their ass with Michigan on the field that year. Speaking of the 97 mesh uniforms. So now that we got all that out of the way, I'm feeling better about myself, guys. I just turned 41, so I've been having some weird drinking nights by myself. a lot of thoughts. You would think that you would lose some thoughts the older you get. Apparently, there's more creep up in your head. So I'm ready for some college football. I'm ready to just lose myself into the season a little bit. You guys got anything to add tonight? Bobby?
No, I mean, I think we covered much of everything on our grab bag of goodies. So
our quest to crash Michigan.
Yes. So I'm just ready for September 2nd. I give a shit about August 31st. September 2nd is when this all starts. So.
Hey, before I let you guys go, too, look, Pat, I'll want you to answer this first. I had I brought this up several times. It's such a weird start to the season with the Labor Day game, which feels like it should be, you know, Miami, Florida State anyways. And then, you know, so you got Labor Day game, then a bye week, you know, then New Mexico. It's such a kind of start to the season. Is that affecting any of your like excitement, you know, to get the season rolling at all?
Probably a little bit. Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's 3 weeks with two games against two shit teams. Maybe that's why I'm so excited for Georgia, is that's like, all right, Notre Dame football is like here. Yeah, so I think that definitely it hurts. It's nice to either have a really big game first and foremost, or like the second week if we want to start with a bad opponent. So yeah, I think that's affecting me a little bit, but at the same time, I'm so ready for college football. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be excited to watch us put up 50 against Louisville. That's going to be fun.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good time. We should definitely have a picnic for that. All right, so we're going to wrap that. That's the show for tonight. We will keep getting into it onto the site. Bobby, thank you for coming back to One Foot Down. We're going to put you to work for sure. we're in wait and see mode right now for everything. I mean, and everybody is across the country. For all the talk that you get out of camp, it's the same as spring where there's going to be players' names that are mentioned constantly. Knocking on wood, saying Kyle Hamilton's name. It's a long wait. And, you know, unfortunately for Notre Dame fans, we're going to have to wait even longer to really get some meat off that bone. But it is what it is. We're here for you. We got all sorts of wild shit. I'm telling you, if you have not read the Dynamite story that was on the site today, get to it. The level of conspiracy that is going on in the college band. I mean, it'll drive you crazy. You throw the royal family.
It goes so much deeper.
You throw the royal family into this. You can throw Palladians into this. You could throw Men in Black into that. I mean, it could get deep. I mean, and seriously, we could get into some trouble. So read that, get your knowledge, and we'll be back soon enough. Hopefully we get Brad finally off of finishing up the rest of his schoolwork, back on another episode soon. Jude, I don't know what he's doing. He's wandering probably the streets of New York right now with a laptop plugging in something into a spreadsheet, I imagine. So from all of us to you, go Irish.